We're here.
Yeah.
We were all miming the that theme song.
What are you talking about? We play that live every time.
We do. We play it live. It's us and the Max Levine. I mean, what is it? No, Max Weinberg seven.
Yeah.
Max Levine six.
Not the Max Levine Ensemble, who are an awesome punk rock band from here in DC.
Oh yeah.
But yeah, they're really good. Anyway, this is Big Planet Comics Podcast number 27.
Whoa,
guys. Whoa. You know what that means?
What's that?
We're all gonna die after this one and become super famous because it's 27.
Oh my god!
Oh my god! It's gonna happen.
No, I thought you had to die during the 27th one, so we're all gonna get killed right now.
Oh, well, that's cool.
Yeah. So
there aren't actually a lot of comics this week, so so if we die, it's no big deal.
We're all there for the entertainment.
Nice. It's no big. That's all we exist for. All right. So my name's Kevin.
Hi, Kevin.
Hi, Jared.
Oh, hi. I'm Jared.
Oh, hey, Jared. Who's this other guy? Who's this sexy beast over here?
I'm Blade Master.
Blade Master. Oh, isn't Blade Master? Nick was reading the, well, this is Nick, by the way, in case you really thought we had Blade Master here.
No, it's Nick the Blade Master.
That would be a good get if we could get Blade Master.
Maybe Max Cash or Pilgrim or Slaughterhouse, maybe Sublime or Warblade.
Why don't you tell people what all these things are from?
They're just...
Are these the things from last week's quiz?
Yeah.
God, I don't even remember.
I thought, honestly didn't recognize them and I wrote that quiz.
Well, Nick was also reading like the Defenders handbook today.
Oh, yes.
Lord.
I thought Blade Master was from that.
He might be.
There were those two naked people called Cloud.
Yeah.
There's
some terrible Defenders characters.
Yep. Ugh.
Those Cloud guys, that was way before its time. Cloud saves and all that. The Cloud is pretty popular now.
Yep.
They should bring him back. Grant Morrison should write it.
Marvel's going to sue him, I thought.
They're going to sue Apple.
Yep.
Yeah.
And the internet.
Yeah. They're going to sue everybody. Everybody deserves it. Marvel's so awesome.
It's true. It's true.
All right. So, yeah. Let's see what you can do. You can subscribe to this on iTunes.
You should.
You can check us out on Facebook at facebook.com/BigPlanetComics, not the other way around.
Dang.
And you can follow us on Twitter at Big Planet Comics.
Mm-hmm.
I was tweeting some today.
Did you tweet it up?
I did. I tweeted Travis Pastrami.
Nice.
Yeah, I want more Twitter followers. So my Twitter is at Kevin Panetta.
What?
Do you have a Twitter, Jared?
I do. It's at Big Planet Comics.
Is that just you? That's your whole thing?
No, I'll get my own.
You're like, here's a picture of my cat at Big Planet Comics.
I wish my cat was at Big Planet Comics. But no, I tweeted a picture today of some delicious cupcakes that were brought to the store.
Yeah, thanks Nicole and Matt.
They were thanked in the tweet.
And the other ones?
The other
Sean.
Ones?
Is his name Sean?
Hmm?
And what's the other girl's name?
Well, do you know what
name?
Sean's last name is?
Colvin.
Connery.
Is it really?
It is. I've had a conversation with him about it.
He's the man now, dog.
He's the man.
Hey!
That's what my pants just
said. Yeah, so there were a lot of comics out this week.
No.
There were a ton of great comics, but not a lot of new
stuff. Not a lot of new stuff. So this is going to be a short one. We're all getting ready for Christmas. We don't have time to do a long podcast this week.
That's true.
I'm getting too old for this crap.
Yeah.
I'm going to retire tomorrow.
Yeah. So what should we do first? Should we review some comics or should we do some viewer mail? Let's review some comics.
We love comics. They're swell. Except when they're written by Scott Lobdell. I prefer important books like Louis Riel. It's time for reviews.
That guy that likes Louis Riel is such a fancy pants.
Yeah.
It's a good book.
That guy. All right. So let's get right into this. Oh, I see. I was trying to remember what came out this week, and now I'm looking at this list, and I'm like, oh, these things. So the first one is The Activity number one. This is by Nathan Edmondson with art by Mitch Garrod. And Nathan Edmondson, we all know.
From Grifter. Aww.
No, Nathan Edmondson writes Who is Jake Ellis. He also does write Grifter, but Grifter is not as good as that.
Nope.
Who is Jake Ellis was one of our picks for one of the best books of the year.
Yeah.
Which we'll be going all over all those in a couple weeks.
We will have a best of review.
But yeah, The Activity number one.
So this is somewhat in the theme of Who is Jake Ellis and Grifter. So Edmondson has clearly been pegged as the kind of thriller espionage writer. This is a group of sort of CIA agents who are all specialized in doing different activities, and they're sent on a mission. And the intro character that you follow is a new woman who's just been assigned to the team for the first time to replace a person who died on the last mission.
Yeah, and it's got a very losers kind of feel to me, maybe.
Yeah, losers, Mission Impossible.
More like winners.
Special forces. Yeah.
Yeah, so they're not quite the CIA. I mean, they say... you know, we do the things the CIA won't do. Sometimes we even have to clean up their messes.
Right.
But so,
how's that for a tagline?
Indeed. This was very much a first issue.
It was like an old school first issue, not like Brian K. Vaughan first issue where you get to the final page, you're like, that's amazing. Or even like the first issue of Who is Jake Ellis. This felt like in issue two, you'll get the amazing twist or the kickoff. And this first issue was good, but not great.
Yeah, it was a cool introduction. You got to kind of know all the characters and what they do and what their specialty is. And then you get to know this new character. But the one thing I felt was a little confusing, I feel like there was like some kind of twist at the end, but I didn't quite understand it.
I felt like there was supposed to be a twist and I didn't see it where it was.
Yeah, well, no, at the end there was like some kind of weird thing where like the girl's like, it's like 3 months earlier and she's like, I'm going to join the CIA group. And
well, they had flashback to her like joining the team or being trying to be recruited to join the team.
Yeah, but the end's confusing.
Yeah, because at the end it's like she's like, I'm going to join this team. Yep. And somebody's like, it seemed like it was maybe like a double cross thing that was being set up.
Yeah,
but they didn't. He didn't. It was a little too set vague. It up very well.
Yeah, it was a little vague. And then the story. It's like I'm interested in this comic. It's cool. I like the characters are pretty well defined. It's the team is good and they all kind of serve their different purposes, which is always good in a team book like this. But I don't know. This first story was like they go out on a mission and she's kind of the main character and she just doesn't do anything on the mission.
No, the first mission, none of them really do anything. It's a very much like modern espionage where it's like we have to go in and put a bug in this lamp and get back out. It's like that's where it's very important, but it's not dramatic or gunfire and that sort of stuff.
Yeah, usually
they're like cleaning up after a siege, and so they're like, we have to clean this car, get rid of this evidence, and that's about it.
This is the kind of story where usually you would read something like this and it's like, oh, this is going to be a simple job.
Right.
And then something goes terribly wrong, And this is like, this is going to be a simple job, and then it's just a simple job.
Yeah, and they're like, job done.
Yeah, so...
then they all high-fived and got coffee.
Yeah, so this is very much setting up the status quo, and then I think the poop's going to hit the fan in the second issue.
I compare this to, like, the kind of in-between Queen and Country issues, where it's like, there's not always crazy missions, but sometimes it's just a very simple having to do a job sort of thing.
Do we know, is this a miniseries?
I didn't say it was, so it might just be an ongoing.
Haven't the foggiest.
We'll see when number two comes out and it says 2 of 5 or something on it.
One question is, what exactly is the activity?
It's just what they're doing.
Yeah. Which is apparently not much.
They're doing activities. They want to, can we make the beds into bunk beds so we can do more activities?
Like, hey, baby, let's do the activity.
Let's do the activity. Yeah, but I thought it was a good issue.
I'd say worth checking out, but I will come back with my review for number two.
Not as good as Who is Jake Ellis? Better than Grifter.
Yes.
That's all. That's what we got to say about that.
Second best Edmondson series ever.
Edmondson. He's pretty new, but he's getting around these days.
Yep. Yeah, he's around the block.
He's getting around the block, indeed. All right. So moving on to a weird thing that came out. This is Batman Incorporated: Leviathan Strikes #1.
Sweet, a new Batman series
by Grant Morrison. This says and Chris Burnham and Cameron Stewart, but I'm going to change that to and Cameron Stewart and Chris Burnham because Cameron Stewart knocked it out of the park in this book.
Yeah,
Chris Burnham also pretty.
Also,
good
Chris Burnham stuff was pretty sweet.
It was pretty sweet, but but the Cameron Stewart stuff was definitely right up my. Riley Brown, Ryan Stegman alley.
He's definitely one of the best.
I think he also had a cooler storyline to draw.
I'm glad I said Ryan Stegman second so that I didn't say up my Brown alley. So, Nick, you've been following Batman Incorporated a little more heavily
than Batman
I have.
In general.
Because I missed two issues of this, which it's nice because in the back there's like a synopsis of everything that's happened.
Yeah.
And I'm like, wow, this is just as confusing as reading all the comics when they came out. But just if you want to break down what the whole Batman Incorporated thing is and kind of what this comic is.
Well,
but it's relatively simple. Batman Incorporated decided he wanted to start this kind of initiative where he created a Batman. Not created a Batman. He went around the world and recruited Batman.
Yeah, first Bruce Wayne came out and said, hey, I've been funding Batman all these years.
Yeah, and then he was like, as Batman, I'm going to go create all these other Batmen around the world. And like Bruce Wayne's like, I'm going to help him. And so he goes around the world and creates a bunch of Batmans. But at the same time, you find, not at the same time, but a little later, you find out that he's been kind of creating this army of Batmen to combat this other army called Leviathan that is kind of like this secret organization that's been around for a while. And then in this storyline, they're kind of taking over his Batman Incorporated. They're taking over some of the Batman and controlling them, like using these crazy mind control devices to take them to their side.
Yeah, and the mind control stuff is actually, some of that's out of the Return of Bruce Wayne storyline.
Yeah, the funny thing is somebody came in and asked me like, where does this take place? I'm like, well, if you look at the first few pages, it says like, please note, this takes place before Flashpoint in the New 52. And I was like, it takes place before that. And they're like, is there anything I need to know before I go into that? I'm like, well,
5 years of this, Grant Morrison Batman.
A lot of this issue ties into Batman, RIP, Batman and Son, Batman Return of Bruce Wayne, a little bit of
Final Batman the Black Glove, Batman the Black Casebook,
a little bit of Final Crisis,
Return of Bruce Wayne. It's like everything.
Like Jared, like at the end, he was like, "He's like, who's Jezebel Jett?" And I was like,
"It's like if you don't know, you're in bad shape in this." Well, you know who Jezebel Jett is.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
I didn't.
But this is, she was Batman's girlfriend.
It's, there you go. It's still part
of. It's been a long time.
The ongoing Grant Morrison Batman epic.
Yeah, definitely.
Which is this is like the final act of it, like coming up, like the last Batman Incorporated storyline is the end of all of that.
Yeah, Kevin and I were talking about that. It's kind of like Grant Morrison's like one of the few guys who's tried to like do a large epic storyline with the Batman characters and kind of change the mythos a lot. Like he didn't introduce Damian, did he?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah,
did he?
Did. Yeah,
yeah.
So
yeah, I mean, the idea of Damian is introduced a long time ago in Bride of the Demon,
right?
But not Son really of the Demon. But it's just Talia like the idea that
or something.
Yeah, and that she has Batman's baby. But the character of Damian was all Damian was all.
Okay, that's what I meant. Grant so basically, Morrison. He said, you know, Bruce Wayne's got a son with you know his arch nemesis's daughter.
That was his first issue.
Yeah, like that. He kind of did the thing where he did Batman in the future. You know, he reintroduced the Batman and Robin concept. You know, he changed up a lot of stuff. He introduced the Batman and the Batman Incorporated.
And he made Dick Grayson Batman. I mean, that was all under him.
I mean, he's gone
Batman through, died under him.
Yeah.
He went through the entire history of Batman.
That's true.
He covered a lot of stories from the 60s, 70s. And then
what was the crazy
What Zur-En-Arr, which Zur-En-Arr, is from the old 50s Batman, the Superman of Planet X, which is like one of my favorite Batman stories of all time.
And all the League of Batman stuff. That's been a huge part of his entire run. And this is all kind of the intro to the final act. And it ends with an awesome cliffhanger, which brings it all full circle back to like for his first issue, basically.
And we're going to get another 7 issues. Is that right?
I thought it was 12. I have no idea.
Another 12 on top. Yeah, basically they're starting a new Batman Incorporated miniseries.
Which will be in the current new universe.
Right, but Batman was not changed a lot in the new universe.
Yeah, he's just got a different costume.
Yeah, it's got armor on it.
Yeah, and also Batgirl doesn't exist anymore. Well, that Batgirl that's in this storyline doesn't exist anymore.
And she's so good in this.
And Oracle doesn't exist
anymore. It's the best. This is the first half of this is the best Stephanie Brown story I've ever read. She was spoiler and then she was Batgirl for a while.
Yeah, it's weird because like you definitely know it's in the old universe because Batgirl's in this. Oracle's in this a lot. Dick Grayson is Batman in this.
Now, a quick aside about like the whole kind of Grant Morrison Batman thing that's been going on. Do you guys think it suffered a little bit by not being just like, hey, here's like the Batman 625 or whatever the first issue that he writes is or whatever it was. And then just being a Batman story the whole way through.
Yeah.
I feel like this should have just been Batman because it was Batman and then it was Return of Bruce Wayne, and then it was Batman and Robin.
Even
and
Final Crisis
was
part of it.
Yeah, and it's like, I can understand why that's a separate thing because that was one of their let's change our universe around.
But that was a huge part of his story, though.
Yeah, so I feel like this would have been a lot better served if it was just Batman, like the main title for like the last 5 years.
Yeah, it should have been treated like when he took over New X-Men and they changed the title of the book when he took over. It should have been like Grant Morrison's Batman for like 50 issues or something.
DC is smart, they'll start putting out this kind of like
giant books
Batman by Grant Morrison collection or whatever, which kind of does it all chronologically and has the bits and pieces you need. Like it won't have all of Final Crisis, but it'll have like the issue,
the important parts.
Well,
and then that kind of fits in with this hardcover line they're doing right now, like Batman by Marshall Rogers and Batman by Don Newton and stuff. But yeah,
we knew who worked on collections for DC Comics.
There was just some weird stuff like Batman and Robin started coming out before Return of Bruce Wayne was done, weird stuff like that.
And Return of Bruce Wayne ran like parallel to Batman and Robin.
Yeah,
right.
But if they did that complete collection thing, they could kind of interweave those issues.
Yeah,
be kind of cool.
But overall, I mean, it's been awesome.
It's been great. Yeah,
it's been great. Yeah. And this continues being great.
Yeah, this is a huge payoff. This issue, especially.
And you can kind of jump into this. Like I said, there's a backup thing that shows you everything that's been going on.
Yeah. So if you've never read any of the recent ones, start at the back. There's a lot of text pages trying to explain it all.
Yeah. Just don't try not to read the last page because it's really spoilery.
Never mind. Bad advice.
All right. So moving on, I would say we all recommend Batman Incorporated Leviathan.
Oh hell yeah!
Oh hell yeah!
All right. So moving on to The Immortal Demon in the Blood #1. Oh, this was written by Ian Edginton.
That's what I was surprised by.
Yeah,
because it wasn't that good. And
I don't think it was bad.
It wasn't bad. And the art is by Vincenzo Villagrazza.
You got to put more marinara sauce on that.
I thought this was okay. It wasn't as good as his other stuff. It's based
on a classic old Japanese book, which is now turned into a neoclassic Japanese video game. Am I getting that right?
If it is a video game, it hasn't come out yet as far as I know.
But yeah, it's samurai, nice feudal Japanese epic like most Japanese comics seem to be, where a guy is killed. It is a little confusing in the jump around in time, but the main twist on this samurai thing is that a magical tattoo artist has found a way to tattoo a person's body to like invite a demon to possess them and thereby grant them immortality, of course, at a terrible cost.
On a very special episode of Tokyo Inc.
Yes. Well, yeah. And so,
I thought it was cool. I like the concept of the tattooed kind of as a gateway to demons entering your soul. There's a cool little thing where he's kind of considered a traitor. He's like an outlaw or whatever. But yeah, it's not like super exciting. It was just kind of like,
there was a little bit of like, I've kind of seen this kind of thing before.
Yeah.
I thought they did some cool stuff like you couldn't have certain kinds of powers with certain kind of tattoos and things like that. So it was kind of interesting they were getting into like the mythology of the whole thing.
Yeah.
I think it'll go somewhere. It
felt like the opening scroll on Star Wars where you're like, here's the cool setup, go. And we're just like, I felt the setup.
Okay. I felt like they had to explain the universe a lot, which is understandable. I mean, because it has its own rules. But
there's not like a clearly defined direction. Like,
that's true.
I don't know where this is going after.
Yeah, I definitely don't know where the second issue is going to go.
Is this ongoing? I didn't see a miniseries, right?
Yeah, that's the thing these days. Depends. It's like we should find out whether these things are miniseries or ongoings. But it used to be, it would always say on the front. But now they're like, they just put number one because they don't want people to go, oh, I'll just get the trade and then just forget about it.
Yeah, and I think the thing is that nowadays, like, a lot of stuff that started as miniseries got really popular and became regular series. So they're like,
oh, like, true. Who is Jake Ellis?
Let's just roll with this and then see what happens.
That's true.
Because Jake Ellis, started off, it was like 1 of 5. And then they made it a series and they stopped putting 0-5 on
there. Yeah, so it's like even if it is a miniseries, now it's like doing series of miniseries, especially, is this published by Dark Horse?
Yeah.
Yeah, especially that. I mean, they do BPRD that way. They do Hellboy. It seems like, and then Image is doing it now with like, Who is Jake Ellis?
Yeah.
And Witch Doctor. I'm sure there's going to be a second Strange Helena Luther Strode miniseries because
I hope so.
Hot damn, that book is good.
Yep.
But you know, if you're into all the samurai stuff and the kind of feudal Japanese stuff,
mystical samurai stuff,
this is pretty. Yeah. It's pretty cool. It's all right.
It's better than Samurai's Blood.
It is better than Samurai's Blood, which isn't a terrible book, but this is better than that.
Yeah.
But again, this is one where issue 2, I think, will really tell on this series.
I think you can kind of tell, isn't it? None of us were super excited about this.
We should do reviews of issue 2 of The Activity and issue 2 of The Immortal.
I think that's fair. We should do more issue 2 reviews.
That's a good idea, because a lot of stuff will have a good premise and then fall off, or vice versa, will like really come into its own.
And we end up saying a lot of the same things. We're like, well, this was a lot of setup in this issue, you know? And it's true. Like issue 1s are not always the most exciting thing. It's like, look at TV shows.
Yeah.
Look at pilot episodes of TV shows and then look at what those shows tend to become. Yeah.
Except for Lost. I mean,
yeah, well, Lost had a great pilot.
And vice versa.
Yeah. No, it definitely
does not follow through.
Yeah, look how Lost started and look what that became.
It got fine.
Shut up. It was fine. that's a conversation we're not going to have tonight. All right, so moving on to Jubilee soft cover.
Yep.
By Robert Kirkman.
Yep.
You may have heard of him.
What did he do?
He wrote Tech Jacket and Derek Donovan. With art by, no, this is art by Derek Donovan, Michael O'Hare, and Casey Jones.
Yep. Casey Jones.
We were talking about that. He's really branched out since he met those kids.
Those crazy turtles.
Casey Jones is that really cool guy that was abused by his father in the Ninja Turtles. Comic, right? Anyway, so this was a kind of Little Red at the time Jubilee miniseries.
That I missed.
Well, obviously.
Entirely.
It only lasted like 8 issues or 6.
Oh, so it wasn't actually meant to be a miniseries?
No.
Oh, you did not finish reading this.
Thanks for calling me out, buddy. I was going to pretend like I read the whole thing.
Well, you're clearly loving it because the 6th issue is one of the best sum up an entire year or two worth of plot lines in a single issue I've ever read. It's amazing. It's like if Buffy had run for 6 issues or 6 episodes and the 6th one was like, she might get killed and might fall in love with this dude, and these people end up happily together. That's what the 6 issues like. It's amazing.
But this is I thought this was great. I read like 3 issues of it. It's basically Jubilee leaving the X-Men and going to live with her aunt in LA and like enrolling in a new school. And it's not really a superhero book so much.
No, It's more like a girl with powers in high school, and mostly about her high school experience.
You know what it just reminded me of? I was trying to think, like, it's kind of got a little bit of Runaways and a little bit of, you know, that sort of style to it. But I think it just reminded me of, like, Veronica Mars. Very much like a very dynamic, spunky heroine who gets mixed up in other people's problems and stuff.
Yeah,
with
yeah, I think
extra
that's fair.
Stuff going on.
Yeah, it reminded me a lot of Stars and Stripe, which was an early Jeff Johns book that he was doing while he was writing JSA, which was about the Star Spangled Kid and like her being in high school.
And I feel the writing in this is pretty close to like early Invincible kind yep. of stuff.
Yeah, definitely.
But yeah, it's pretty awesome. I definitely was one of those people that did not read this when it was coming out. You know, all I had read up to that point was Robert Kirkman's He-Man comics.
Wow.
No, I don't know. Anyway, the art's kind of so-so, but
yeah, it's really? Not it's not the greatest.
I like
it. Well, and there's, some of it's okay.
Yeah, it's okay.
It's serviceable, but I love the how everything kind of slowly was revealed a little bit at a time. You find out that like her aunt's into some crazy stuff. That
yeah,
she doesn't
like,
know
about stuff developing.
That definitely yeah. seems to be the big thread that's like running through the whole thing. Like yeah. They reveal a little bit in each issue about that. And
there's a cool, like the first issue sets up a lot. Like Jubilee's in this new school. She makes new friends. She makes new enemies.
There's and, guys she's interested in. She gets yeah. in trouble with the principal who doesn't like her.
Yeah. And then the principal makes her do this kind of counseling program, peer counseling program. And so that's kind of one of part of the main threads too, is her peer counseling. And that's mixed in with the crazy stuff with her aunt and her school life and all that.
And then it's a thing that she's still got mutant powers. And, you know, occasionally she gets a phone call from Wolverine checking up on her and stuff like that.
So, the issue with Wolverine is really funny.
Yeah. I think the Veronica Mars thing is actually really good. I mean, yeah. not everybody's seen that show, but like, you know, it's
amazing.
It's very much like a drama comedy.
Yeah.
That has like a big high
an
school element and like
too.
A big
yeah.
plot, but then like little individual stories as well.
Yeah.
It's actually really well done. I feel like if this came out now.
Yeah,
it would actually be really popular, but I think just at the time it was like Marvel was trying a lot of new stuff. What is this from like 2004, 2005
yeah, we're trying
or something?
To figure it out
like.
Because they say in the first episode that like we're here in LA and like, you know, there used to be this evil crime syndicate called the Pride that ran the place and they disappeared a few months ago, which is the plot line of Runaways.
It was around the time of Runaways.
So,
yeah.
So I think that was like 2004, 2005
yeah.
when Marvel was really kind of
revamping
their whole universe. Yeah. Kind of when New Avengers was just starting and they were kind of just doing away with the old and starting new stuff. And this one just didn't make it.
Yeah, which is, I really agree. It's a shame. This book is really fun. And
but
really
you can
cool.
clearly see why it didn't make it. I mean, it's an X-Men related book that doesn't have any X-Men stuff in it.
Yeah.
Yeah, but still, it's awesome.
I would say it's comparable to the recent, like, She-Hulk series.
Yeah.
That was really yeah. good, but just wasn't enough about, like, fighting supervillains yeah. and big epic storylines for people.
See, I think that's one of the big problems with Marvel is they don't have, like, this kind of side stories where it's just like we're going to do a story about a teenager in a school who's got problems.
They never,
well, they do those things.
They just never sell very well.
Yeah, they just don't sell very well, but they keep trying them over. And I mean, like She-Hulk's, that was
yeah,
like
but
last
I'm saying,
year.
But almost all those are like superheroes who are just not being written punching people. It's not like here's just a girl going to school in L.A.
Well, Marvel's a superhero company.
They don't have to own.
Well, they did like Spider-Man Loves Mary Jane or whatever, and that was.
Yeah.
Kind of successful for a little while. Didn't
but again, she dates a superhero.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's a superhero universe.
Yeah, yeah. It's not like Marvel would be like, here's our line of normal people comics.
Why yeah, not? It's like, why you know, not? Because nobody would buy them.
Yeah, nobody would buy them.
I mean, I always thought it was a great idea, but it's just nobody would buy it.
Yeah, nobody would ever buy it. No.
That's the unfortunate truth, you know? Yeah. It's like, yeah, nobody would care.
Yeah.
I disagree.
It would have to be like Dr. Doom's butler.
No.
Which would be a great problem. Comic.
I mean, it would be a great comic.
Yeah, see, it would be. Like, but a lot of those comics would be great.
But nobody
you know?
Would buy it either.
Yeah.
There was a Night Nurse comic at one point.
Yeah,
it's true.
Nobody bought it.
Nope.
Even X-23, which is like has a lot of superhero-y stuff, is already canceled because nobody reads it. Man.
That's true.
It's hard for them to get like a new thing going.
It's pretty sad, guys.
It's pretty sad. But at least they try.
At least yeah. they try.
And like I'm sure like every few years there'll be a new really cool miniseries like kind of like this that
yeah
may not do too well, but
and that's a good thing
love
that
it.
This is out in a trade, so now we've all read it.
Yeah. Awesome. All right, so that's Jubilee. I mean, I think we all liked it a lot.
I yeah.
like really it sounds like we all want every comic to be like it if you listen to the last 5 minutes of us talking.
True.
All right, so moving on to The Last Battle. Softcover. This is by Tito Faraci and Dan Brereton.
My boy Tito.
Tito is the man. Dan Brereton, people might know, he did Nocturnals. for a long, long time. He did Batman Thrill Killer.
Yep.
Which should come back in print because that was an awesome, awesome comic. He has a painted style that's very influenced by like old creepy and eerie kind of stuff.
Very
like
distinct.
The Adams Family. Yeah, it's very distinct. It's immediately recognizable. Yeah. He also did some of the Punisher Frankencastle stuff.
Oh yeah. Yeah, he did one issue of that. Yeah,
and that was amazing. Yeah. But I thought this comic was really good. It's basically about this Roman soldier who, well, I talk all the time. Why don't you guys tell somebody what's
going on? Well, he's sent out to kill some Vikings.
Vikings? He's fighting Gauls.
Fighting Gauls.
Same thing.
No, it's not.
You need to read your asterisks to learn your history.
You know, this is straight up historical adventure stuff. It's, what, 50 BC, roughly, when this was set?
Something like that.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
But yeah, Julius Caesar's up there when he's trying to conquer Gaul, and there's this Roman legionnaire who's been sent out by Caesar to go track down one of the Gaulish leaders, and intrigue develops and a lot of carnage, and there's basically a A-team of like henchmen working with this soldier.
Yeah, basically, yeah. it's almost like The Activity, but yes. You know, like set in ancient Rome.
Yeah,
it's and there's a lot of like intro. Basically, they send him out to kill this guy. And then it ends up that there's this connection between them that's told through flashbacks. I don't want to talk too much about what it is because that's
a
big part of the story. But no, I mean, I feel like that connection between this guy and the guy that he's meant to kill is what makes this really awesome. It's like this human connection inside of this kind of action-oriented. It almost reminded me of Northlanders a little bit in some ways.
Just the Vikings?
it was all the Vikings. Yeah, kind of reminded me of Skyrim.
A lot of Skyrim
because of all the Vikings.
Yeah. Jeez. No, but this was a really well told comic. Nick and I were both wondering who this guy was, and you said Tito Ferracci is. He does Benelli comics.
He's one of the big writers for the Italian scene. Apparently, he writes Tex, which is a cowboy comic that's immensely popular over there. He's the main writer on that. And some other stuff, but that's his main thing.
You were telling us about the kind of way that they write comics over there, which means that this guy probably has a lot of experience. Well, it's interesting.
No,
I'm just
sighing because it's like such a great style of doing comics. Basically, the Benelli style is to do an 80 to 100 page graphic novel for a character every month. So it's like if you come into the store for November and get the Spider-Man graphic novel, which would be by one artist, but then the next month it would be the next Spider-Man graphic novel by a different artist. But all of them would generally be written by a main story writer. So like be Brian Bendis would be doing 12, Ultimate Spider-Man graphic novels a year. And every one or, every sixth or seventh one would be by an artist. And then there'd be six or seven guys drawing it. So it's a pretty awesome way to get a huge chunk of story every month.
Yeah, no, it seems cool. It seems like something worth trying over here.
Yep.
But it also it explains why Tito Ferracci is such a good writer.
Because he's written a lot of comics.
He's written probably thousands of pages of comics.
Yeah.
Yeah, so this is definitely worth checking out. It's very cool. It's like $8 or something, but it felt like it had the heft of a graphic novel to me.
Yeah, definitely.
Like, it was...
I would definitely recommend it to fans of Game of Thrones or something.
Yeah, or fans of...
Rome.
Lost Vikings.
Yeah.
Fans of Lost Vikings.
Or just anything with Vikings in it.
Yeah.
Fans of Skyrim.
Like a thriller movie in some ways.
Did you guys watch Rome? The TV show Rome?
Yes.
It was a good TV show.
It was amazing.
But anyway.
You heard they might make a movie?
Really?
Yeah. A third one.
They should get Tito Ferracci to write it.
That's a good idea.
All right. So moving on to Jason Conquers America by Jason. This is a comic by Jason.
Does it star Jason?
It's about Jason.
This is the follow-up to Jason Takes Manhattan.
That would be amazing. No, but Jason is a Norwegian cartoonist. He's drawn and written hundreds or thousands of comics.
Graphic novels?
Is it 12 graphic novels?
Talk about it. There's a checklist in the back of this.
Well, Hey Wait was like the first big one, right? And then there was Shh and Last Musketeer, I Killed Adolf Hitler. He's written a ton of stuff.
Why are you doing this? 100,000?
I'm just trying to list all the comics.
I love 10,000 corpses.
Oh yeah, I love it. All yeah, that
100,000 corpses.
Yeah. So basically, he does a lot of stuff. He has a very like deadpan style, very simple, clear line.
He's one of the best kind of. He could do so much with like one panel.
Yeah,
it's pretty crazy.
Yeah, he has a very simple style, but he's very good at adapting it to whatever kind of story he's telling.
Yeah, he's a really good visual storyteller.
But so this is basically it's just a comic length thing. that has a lot of shorter strips he's done for like magazines and things that haven't been published in other places, and a couple of interviews, and then like a checklist of his graphic novels and stuff like that. Basically, if you're a Jason fan, I feel like this is a thing that you would want.
You must get this.
And if you haven't read Jason's stuff, this is definitely not the place to start.
I don't... Yeah, that's the problem. It's like, I was hoping it could be like a really good, here, check this out if you haven't read Jason's stuff. But
no.
It's not
so
like
much
a sampler.
More about him rather than his comics.
Yeah. And the stuff that's in it is slightly throwaway. I mean, it's fun. And they're like gag strips. There's like a funny one about like these two kids dressed up as like episode one characters and they're fighting each other. And Darth Vader's like going to his therapist and he's like, oh, I feel so old.
Yep.
Yeah.
And like, that's funny, but I also don't feel like that's like very indicative of like what Jason does.
That's part of his style, but it doesn't show the breadth of what he's able to do.
I would say just go read,
I Killed Adolf Hitler or Last Musketeer. Either one of those. Amazing.
I think I Killed Adolf Hitler is the good, the best, like in kind of introductory thing. Yeah. Last Musketeer is a little crazy. It's awesome.
Yeah. I Killed Adolf Hitler definitely has that balance that Jason strikes better than anybody.
That's
of like
point.
Of like telling a story within like a genre kind of, but making it very like emotionally true and amazing. Like it's so fantastic.
And the one thing I found out about this and that I didn't know is that there's a sequel to Last Musketeer coming out, like Athos in America.
And that's a 200 page graphic
200
novel.
200 pages.
Oh really?
So that's gonna be incredible. And I think, this is almost just like an advertisement for that, basically.
Yeah.
But this is a cool book. If you love Jason's stuff, pick it up. But
yeah, if you've read any Jason stuff, not only has an interview with Jason, but interviews his colorist.
Yeah, which is interesting. Fascinating. I thought that was really interesting. But again, it's more ephemera than like, you know, it's not I Killed Adolf Hitler.
Yeah, this is strictly for fans of Jason, but this is a good point for us to use it to recommend
all other
right Jason. Exactly yeah
because Jason is amazing.
He's amazing.
Yeah,
he's one of the best cartoonists around.
Definitely
sure.
One of my top five.
It's also helpful because like I said, it did have a checklist in the back which explains that a lot of his stuff came out in the Meow Meow anthology that came out in Norway back in the day, his first five or six stories. And he generally writes like 48 page stories in the beginning. And those were often reprinted, in English, and then those went out of print, and they got collected, and two of them put together in a 96-page one, which went out of print, and now put in, like, a, 200-page hardcover. So there's a complete checklist of all the stuff that's in English, how they've been reprinted, and how you can get them, and when they came out. So if you're confused at all, like me, about Jason's output, there you go.
It sounds like the Jack Kirby checklist, which is, like, the most insanely ridiculous thing you could ever see, and it's, like, everything's reprinted in, like, 40 different things. But anyway, this is awesome if you like Jason, and if you don't like Jason...
Read Jason.
Yeah.
Because if you don't like him, you just haven't read it.
Yeah, pretty much.
All right. So moving on to Memorial Number One. This is written by Chris Roberson, who's been writing a lot of stuff recently. He wrote...
What else did he do?
Well, he finished up the Superman storyline.
Oh.
So basically he got... He's like, here's this bunch of crap on a plate. Why don't you make it into a filet mignon? And he tried and it didn't really work.
He's like, that looks like a filet mignon. It does not taste like
But he's been writing iZombie and that's been awesome. Oh, right. He's still maintaining that and that's great. And this is drawn by Rich Ellis, who I don't really know that well, but I thought the art in this was actually really well done.
Yeah, it was great. Yeah, I liked it a lot.
Yeah. The story in this is cool too. It's very fablesy.
Yeah. It's basically about this girl who can't remember who she is or where she came from. And that's like in the first few pages. And then you kind of see that there's this kind of world of memories. And there's some evil queen kind of erasing all the memories. And so people around the world are starting to forget the faces of people they knew. And like slowly kind of like memories are starting to disappear. And there's a lot of crazy like forgotten characters that show up in this. And she ends up finding this crazy shop and that leads her to
enter the world, the fantasy land or the reality.
Yeah. Everland it's called. Yeah. And I thought this was really well done.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like the story is like a lot of the things we talk about. It's very much like an introduction to what's going on, but it was really engaging as well. They were like setting up a lot of cool stuff that was similar to other things you may have seen in like things like Fables or shows like Once Upon a Time and like some of this other stuff that's come out recently, like Kill Shakespeare.
Yeah, because like these kind of like characters start. It's funny, one of the main characters is like Schrodinger's cat.
yeah.
Or just the cat named Schrodinger.
Yeah. So, but it was really well done. Like I said, the art's really great.
Really cool.
Yeah. And no, it was definitely cool enough. There's like a really there are a couple scenes that are like really creepy, which is cool. And
yeah, some really cool characters in this.
Yeah, they did a good job of establishing these villains. They're very distinct. There's like a guy who's like a metal man, like just like a human, like a living puppet. And there's like a crazy zombie man, and then
and it captures that kind of mystical realism thing that's great. Like kind of like Neil Gaiman's Neverwhere, where it's like you'll walk down and like you're like, oh, I never saw this door in this alley before. And you go through it, and it takes you to like a crazy place. It's like it's that kind of stuff, and it's well executed, and it's fun to read, and it's a good first issue.
Yeah,
I really liked it.
Yeah, people who like Fables.
Yeah, definitely. If you're into Fables, definitely check this out. It's very well done.
Yeah,
it's probably better than Fables is right now.
Maybe Fables is pretty good.
Yeah. The problem with Fables is I'm always comparing it to like when it was
the
its first best.
Fables, yeah, the early stories, yeah.
Like the whole March of the Wooden Soldiers and all that stuff.
Well, I just read the new issue that came out this week. It was pretty awesome.
I'll have to check it out. I need to read the superhero storyline. I haven't actually read that yet. But anyway, Memorial number one. This very good. It's this is a 6-issue miniseries. We actually know this time.
Oh, we know.
Okay. We know for sure. We'll see. That might change to like of 5 or 7 when the next issue comes out.
That's true.
All right. So moving on to Rat Fist. This is a soft cover by Doug Ten Naple, who has also put out very many
graphic novels.
I think we talked about Bad Island on here in one of our earlier shows.
Yep.
Yeah, and we loved Bad Island.
I love most of his stuff.
Yeah, I love most of his stuff as well.
Pretty much all of it.
Huh? Yeah, Creature Tech's great. One of his early things, Gear, is fantastic. A lot of people know Doug Ten Naple they won't know that it was him, but they'll know his art style. He's the guy that designed the Earthworm Jim games.
Yep. Creator of Earthworm Jim.
And Earthworm Jim makes a little appearance in this book.
He does, as does Doug Ten Naple, because apparently this was... Nick, you said you read some of this online. It was running it as like a daily comic strip, so he was like serializing it online.
Yeah, you put up a page like every day.
Yeah. So in the back, he talked about it a little bit where he said that this was his attempt to try out the online audience. He's like, I've never done anything like this before, so I talked to some of my friends who do comic strips. So yeah, he's just clearly trying something new, and you said it didn't work very well, or just like it seemed like he was making up as he went?
Yeah, it definitely felt like it was just kind of making up as I go along, like... It felt like he was trying it out. Like, he's like, let's do this. And he's like, put out a page, and he's like, okay, and what happens next? And then the next day, he's like, all right, this happens. And the next day, he's like, well, this happens. And it feels very disjointed, and there's not really a clear, like, storyline. There's sort of stuff that happens that kind of leads to other stuff happening, but there's no, like...
Well, the thing I thought that was good about is that, like, every page did kind of have, like, a punch to it. It wasn't like, you know, I'm going to do 3 pages of emotion. It's like, I'm going to have something crazy happening on every page. So it was very fast paced.
But I felt like some of those, like at times that was sort of a disservice to what was going on. It's because like, it would be like a little joke about like this guy's pet rat or whatever. And it was just some of those jokes kind of felt flat, I think. So it's like, and that would be all the content of the page would be like this little gag. And when they don't work, it really like kills the momentum of the story a little bit. But it's basically like, kind of a superhero story.
Yes, he is the Rat Fist. Or no, he's corrected. Sorry, he says he is just Rat Fist, not the Rat Fist. He has a pet rat. His big dilemma at first is that he wants to ask his girlfriend to marry him, but she is scared of rats, and he has a pet rat and dresses up like a giant rat as his superhero alter identity. And then it gets really weird, as if that wasn't weird enough. When he begins turning into a rat himself, he cuts off his tail, who becomes a sentient talking tail that he swings around town on. He runs into other people who've been mutated into humanoid animals. He literally talks to himself. Doug Ten Naple is a creator. He runs into Earthworm Jim. He goes backwards and forwards in time. I don't remember.
So very obviously, he's just trying out a lot of things in this. He's like throwing stuff at the wall, and some of it sticks and some of it doesn't. And it's just... It's tough because when you compare it to something like Bad Island,
which was astounding,
which was like
tight,
like maybe
tight
the best thing he's ever done, you know,
I think that's the main thing I didn't like about this. Like Doug Ten Naple's like an amazing storyteller.
Right.
He can tell a story really well, like not even just through his like dialogue, but just through the art alone. He can tell a really good story. And like you can see that here and there in this, but it's just way too disjointed and just random. And
like most of his graphic novels have like a very emotional hook and like have like a family dynamic that ties into the story and stuff like that, whether it's like Creature Tech or Tomisaurus Rex or you know, Bad Island. There's always like a core like emotional hook in the story, and that is not there at all in this. That's true. just pure gag-id weird stuff.
It's crazy that...
But there's a plot to it. I mean, he definitely veers off of it a lot, but there's story to it. It's just not...
Yeah, yeah.
It's just not a very strong story.
Yeah.
It's like one story, while I feel like his other stuff always has kind of a few things that are kind of working together.
Plots. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and like, you know, metaphors and things, foreshadowing and nuance. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And that's just kind of missing from this.
Yeah.
Unfortunately. Yeah. The art's still great.
It is. I kind of like his art on this.
It feels a little rushed at times, but
kind of in a good way.
But yeah, he's like a guy that can pull that off.
Yeah.
But so, you know, if you're a completist, it's good. But like we were saying about Jason's, like if you haven't read any Doug Ten Apel, don't make this the first thing you read.
That's true.
Read Creature Tech or read
Monster Zoo,
or just read Bad Island.
Bad Island.
Bad Island's so good. All right. So moving on to Tina's Mouth, an existential comics diary hardcover by Keshni Kashyap and Mari Araki.
So my first beef with this was turning to the credits page where it said copyright Keshna, what's her face?
Keshni Kashyap.
With no other credit for the artist, which I can understand because this is a very like strongly written work that the art is supplementing. But
I could also, I bet this was written before it was drawn.
Yeah.
So that would maybe explain something.
And I'm sure they could be like...
usually how it works, isn't it?
And it's autobiographical.
Sometimes. Not the Marvel way.
And it's autobiographical. Is it? So, yeah, I mean, that's the character's name. Oh, no. Yeah. No, I guess maybe it's not.
It seems... I don't think it definitely seems like there's
semi-autobiographical.
Yeah, or at least sure. She's a very good taking from life kind
of writer. It's based on probably a lot of her experiences because it seems like she knows a lot about... like how this works, like it's about
anyway.
Like,
but before we get ahead of ourselves, why don't we tell people what the actual comic is?
That's
about.
What I was getting to. Sorry, it's like about like this young girl who's like whose parents are Indian, and she's they want her to be like really successful and all this stuff, and she's kind of a little bit of a rebel. But most of it's about her like having kind of this existential crisis.
Well, the main thing is that her parents are Indian, but they have since moved from India to a very small town in California.
Well, I think the main thing is that as a school project, she's been tasked to write this existential diary.
Yeah.
So as she starts writing it, she sort of starts looking inward more and more, and kind of, and it's more about that. I mean, it's about all the external stuff, but then it's just kind of like about what goes on inside of your head as you're experiencing all that stuff.
Yeah, but it's so well written. It's not just like, you know, I had a bad day today. She's like very analytical in a way that
it's
tells
really
a very compelling
well
story.
And you can definitely tell that it's written from experience because like just the way the characters, like they feel really genuine. So like I bet like a lot of these characters are based on like people she knew. In her
life. These are thinly veiled. Yeah. Characters. Yeah. I mean, most of these people are going to be real people.
Yeah.
Like I'm sure her uncle that hits on all every 16-year-old with breaths is like, you know, like that's a real guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, I thought it was really well done.
It was a strong, fantastic story.
The presentation is kind of different than a typical comic.
Yes.
It's half comic, half novel.
Yeah. It's very much like, this is a weird thing to compare this to, but it's very much like Diary of a Wimpy Kid.
Yeah.
In that, like, it's prose, but then there are, like,
illustrations,
very classic comic things, like, you know, there are word balloons in it and things like that as well. But most of it's told through, like chunks of text.
Yeah, and there's segments that are just comic, too. There's, like, parts where there's, like, 7 or 8 pages of just comics.
But there's a lot of information, especially like the journal entries and stuff, where there's just a lot of ideas and information and writing just to get across.
It reads really... really like quickly. You can I was just kind of like enthralled by it, and like I got through like 60 pages, and like I didn't even notice that I'd been reading it for like half an hour.
Well, and the thing that's interesting is like is when you're jumping back and forth between like I keep saying like, but when you're jumping back and forth between prose and comics like that, a lot of times it can throw the pacing off in
true.
A book.
Yeah.
But I felt like this, all the transitions felt very smooth,
really well done.
And it was just, it was really well executed from, at least to my knowledge, a first-time comics writer
and
artist.
Yeah.
It feels very, like, true, like, very pure. Like, you feel like this is, like, stuff that's, like, from her heart. Like, it doesn't feel like she just wanted to tell some crazy story. She just, like, she wanted people to know, like, how she feels about family and, like, who she is and, like, the different, like, Indian-American culture and stuff like that. Like, it feels...
And it was also a perfect time to tell a story because it's literally when this girl's on the cusp of kind of becoming an adult. She's, like, in high school, and, like, she's got, like, you know, she's never had a boyfriend, and all her friends are starting to date guys, and, like, her best friend kind of leaves her to go hang out with a new guy that she wants to date, and like her friend's patterns switch and she's trying to reinvent herself, and you know, her family's having problems at home and trying to change everything. You know, it's just like when everything's changing and she's, it's just the perfect writing style to analyze all that and tell a good story about it.
And it's something that almost everybody can relate to.
Yeah.
From time to time, I found the character to be a little annoying.
Yeah. Yeah.
Kind of full of herself in a weird way. Like that kind of, like she puts herself above other people, but then complains about other people that do the same thing. Yeah. But I think that's interesting because that's what people do.
Especially when you're a teenager.
Yeah. In that way, like a teenager thinks of themselves. Right. Like, I'm like smarter than everybody else.
And right. They can see the faults with everybody else, but doesn't realize that they have all those same faults.
Because people tell her like, you need to grow up. And she's like, no, what are you talking about? No.
Yeah. It's like when people tell you, it's like, oh, but you're so immature. It's like anybody who says anybody's immature is like, you know. Anyway. But the art in this, I felt when I first started reading it, I wasn't a huge fan of it because it was I thought it was kind of stiff in a way, and but it has a personality of its own. And yeah, and it's not like the art gets better. I mean, it's pretty consistent all the way through, but it's just the you're so engrossed that it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
And when I say it doesn't matter, I don't mean like it's bad. It's just like you realize that the art style really fits the story very well. Yeah, no, this is a great comic. I mean,
I thought it was great.
Like we were talking about last week, as like Tale of Sand came out so late that it would have never made it into our best of the year list. But I think this came out even later, and I think it's probably up there in the top graphic novels of the year.
For sure.
Definitely.
Yeah, so that's Tina's Mouth, an existential comic diary.
Very unexpected.
Yeah. It came out of nowhere. I don't know who even published.
It's one of the last things I read this week.
It might have been Houghton Mifflin.
A major
book
publisher.
Big book publisher.
Yeah. So that was all the new stuff this week. There were a couple other things that came out. Tales Designed to Thrizzle #7, which was incredible.
It was so funny. So we should talk about it.
Let's talk about it. Let's talk about it for a minute.
All right. Go ahead.
Well, this is Michael Kupferman, who just does these like once a year, however often these come out.
Yeah, but he's probably most well known now for
Snake and Megan.
Or no, the autobiography of Mark Twain, which was a pretty huge hit this year.
Yeah, but so these come out whenever, and it's basically his short story anthology. He just puts out whenever he wants to do short stories.
Yeah, he just wants to write some crazy stuff.
Comics. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So God, what does that one? It's like,
well, this one's about Quincy Emmy.
Partly.
the vast majority.
A big chunk of
the
it.
The framework in a lot of ways. But also had like the comic of St. Peter. It's St. Peter's own comic, including St. Peter himself introducing it. A retelling of Reservoir Dogs 2.
With Snake and Bacon.
The sequel to Reservoir Dogs. I don't know.
The sequel to Reservoir Dogs is so funny.
It was also funny.
Guys like, oh, well, we all got shot last time, but let's go out and do this again.
And that's just definitely that Michael Kupperman style of just like pure insanity. But you can tell he's so smart at the same time the way he writes.
So funny. Like every time I pick up a Kupperman comic, I kind of put off. I'm like, oh, this is not going to be my sort of thing. And then like 2 pages in, I'm like laughing. And
the funniest things in this is like one of the main characters is like Quincy Emmy. He's like, what is he? I don't even know. He's like, he investigates.
Yeah,
different murders or it's like a old TV show or something. Like,
murderous bathtubs,
like Ironsides or whatever. But he's like,
well, I mean, it's based on Quincy MD, which was like an old show about a doctor that solved murders and things like that. Yeah,
yeah. It's so funny when there's a part where he's like, somebody calls him Quincy. He's like, no, call me Quincy. That's my last name. He's like, Quincy is my last name, but call me Quincy because that's my first name.
Yeah, so I mean, Tales Designed to Thrizzle is always insane. There's a hardcover of the first five, and that's definitely worth checking out. There was a guy that came in the store the other day, and he was like, "I gotta get a present for my brother. Like, he loves Mr. Show.
Yeah,
what should I get him?" I was like, "You should just get him Tales Designed to Thrizzle because it's amazing."
Yep.
So,
anything else?
Uncanny X-Force 19. Which
beginning of a new storyline?
Yeah, it's like
Dark Angel saga.
Dark Angel. It just ended last week, so I don't want to say a lot about what happened.
This is a little more of like an epilogue to the new last one, and kind of like the intro to the new stuff. I think the next issue is actually a point one, so that'll be kind of the beginning. Because this is definitely like an epilogue a little bit, but it's also kind of leading into the new stuff
and a different. I feel artist, like so it's, that's why they couldn't.
We should definitely talk about the next issue because that'll be a big one.
But two things about this: one, the art by Robbie Rodriguez in the issue is fantastic.
It's really good.
It's really good. And the cover by Raphael Grandpa I just love to see whenever that guy works.
Yeah, I'm like, why isn't Raphael Grandpa drawing?
I feel like he takes a long time.
I think he does. His stuff is really highly detailed. Yeah. But if you saw the cover of this and you really liked it, check out Mesmo Delivery Service because it's a fantastic comic.
Yep.
All right, so that's it for our reviews this week.
Is that it for the podcast?
That's not it for the podcast. Aww. We got some viewer mail. The first one is this is from Christian.
Hey, Christian.
He says, I'm looking forward to picking up Tales of Sand.
Excellent.
Whenever we can get it back in. Yeah. And started thinking how cool it would have been if Jim Henson had made comics during his career.
Ooh.
Are there any artists, creators, or authors who do you like to see work in the medium? Bill Watterson springs to mind for
kills me.
But I mean, he did comics.
Yeah, he did.
But I would love to see him come back, obviously. Bill Watterson did Calvin and Hobbes, which is the best thing that ever happened to the planet Earth.
We said from other media,
that's
though.
True.
Yeah, so from other media. Well, now Bill Watterson just does watercolors. Games. So so now he wants them to come back. but from other, I mean, obviously there have been other. Oh, he says at the end, happy holidays, Christian Trixelblick.
Nice.
Don't have his name backwards.
Yeah. So there have been other people that have come in, like Damon Lindelof came in and he did the Ultimate Hulk versus Wolverine.
We were talking about that today. It was amazing.
Darren Aronofsky did that Fountain comic that was like the original screenplay for the Fountain that he wanted to produce that didn't get made.
Yeah. And so, the Wachowskis had
they did the Matrix comics and then they did Frankenstein.
Oh God, I forgot they wrote
Doc
that.
Doc Frankenstein. So I mean, are there any guys that
I was just talking about it today that, like, for a lot of the DC New 52, I felt like they got in some fantastic artists, especially some people we'd never heard of, some Europeans and stuff, but I felt like they didn't branch out enough into new writers, which is certainly Marvel's something very good. They pick up young, new, weird talent that's self-publishing a comic or whatever. But for outsiders,
how amazing would a comic written by Jim Jarmusch be?
That would be pretty good. Drawn by Jason.
Oh,
yeah. That would be fantastic.
Wow. Let's make it happen.
Really good.
I'll call my
agent. Nobody knows who Jim Jarmusch is, but
I do.
He's an amazing director. Well, but we're all movie nerds.
Yeah, that's true.
Jim Jarmusch directed what's probably his biggest movie? Night on Earth with Winona Ryder. Probably that was his biggest one.
Really? I don't know.
Maybe. Dead Man Walking.
Dead Man. Yeah,
Lost in Translation. No, he didn't do Lost in Translation.
Translation. That was Sofia Coppola.
Oh, I wouldn't mind reading a comic by her.
Oh, that would be really boring.
Broken Flowers?
He did do Broken Flowers. I guess that was kind of a big movie. He doesn't really have a big movie.
Ghost Dog, Way of the Samurai.
Oh, God.
God, that movie is so good.
Yeah, I love it.
We just talk about Ghost Dog for a second?
That movie's such a mess.
Yeah, I have the soundtrack. I love it.
The part where he kills the guy, like, through the sink.
Oh, yeah. That's amazing.
The soundtrack is great. It's all RZA from Wu-Tang Clan. Yep. But anybody else? Who are you guys thinking about here?
Well, I think another thing is that it's very difficult, like, when they brought, like, Jodie Picoult or Picoult, however you say her name. They brought in like novelist writers to try and do comics, and a lot of them just couldn't adapt their style to comics to make it a very effective thing. But I feel like there are a lot of really good writers out there that would do it.
I think the weirdest one that's actually happened is like Rashida Jones had her comic.
Really?
Yeah. Frenemy of a State.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah, she
never made
that
connection. Yeah. Yeah, I know it was her. I just didn't think
it was actually pretty good. Yeah, it was good.
Yeah.
But like we were talking about this last time, there are not a lot of good standalone sci-fi comics. Like, there are so many good sci-fi authors out there, and a lot of them can't, you know, get their books published.
There's a lot more crossover nowadays.
Yeah, I'm surprised, like, maybe, like, Greg Bear hasn't written any comics.
But he makes so much more money from making
comics. Like, yeah, that's nobody makes money from comics.
Yeah,
but then again, how many people are making money from novels? So.
But there's been a lot of crossover lately. Like, some of the guys who do, like, Daily Show have been doing comics.
Yeah, they did true. Shame Itself.
And then really some good. Of the SNL guys did, like, Spider-Man comic. And
I'd be curious to see what J.J. Abrams would do with, like, an ongoing series. Maybe sort of executive produce it the way that Whedon does the Buffy comics.
Yeah, but it makes like millions of dollars for movies, so it's kind
right.
Of like,
but that doesn't mean he's not gonna. I mean,
he has to have the passion for.
Well, Lindelof came in and did it, you know. Yeah. So I mean, I imagine J.J. Abrams likes comic books, right?
Yeah. But he's like, I ain't got time for this. I gotta go make a new Star Trek movie.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
That's true. But no, I feel like there's a lot of like kind of auteurs, especially in film, who would probably enjoy being freed from the constraints of a studio system or, you know, whatever they have to put up with to make a film to just write a comic book.
Did J.J. Abrams have anything to do with that Star Trek Paul Pope comic?
What?
No, that was written by Robert Orci and
the guys who wrote the movie.
The guys who wrote the movie, yeah. Did you not read that, Jared? Basically, there was an issue of Wired that was all edited by J.J. Abrams, and it was all about, like, mysteries.
It was kind of involved with J.J. Abrams, I guess.
Yeah, and so the guys that wrote the Star Trek movie wrote a Star Trek comic about Spock being stranded on that planet for Forever or whatever, yeah. And it was drawn by Paul Pope.
Yeah, maybe I did read that.
It was amazing. Fantastic. I'm sure you would have remembered if you read it.
Yeah, I read so many comics.
But there are other people I'd like to see write a comic. I'd like to see Godzilla write a comic.
That would be amazing.
I'd like to see Shaquille O'Neal write a comic.
He did.
Did he?
Called Space Jam the comic.
Space Jam the comic. I don't think Shaquille O'Neal was in Space Jam.
Kazam.
No, he just wrote the comic.
Kazam, the ongoing series.
Kazam, I'd like to see Shaquille O'Neal write a Steel comic.
He did.
It's called Steel, the movie, the comic.
Yeah.
It's written
by Shaquille O'Neal.
The novelization.
I'd like to see the Ninja Turtles write a comic. Yeah, I don't know. That's a tough one. But I would, I mean, obviously J.J. Abrams has his things that he has to do.
Oh, I got one.
But the thing is, in an ideal world, I would like to see an ongoing series by J.J. Abrams, see what he would do with it.
Umberto Eco?
Yeah, that would be interesting.
Because he loves comics.
I'd love to see
feel like he would do
Michael
one.
Bublé write an issue of Spider-Man.
Going back to... That's okay. Going back to Umberto Eco, if you haven't read the introduction he wrote to whatever Peanuts volume it was, like the first or second one,
God,
that's so amazing. He talks about how Peanuts is like jazz in that, like, it's variations on a theme, working within that construct, like, makes it even better. It's amazing. He's
a smart dude.
He's a smart guy.
Probably likes Louis Riel.
He probably does. Anyway, I think we answered that question a little bit.
Got it. Barack Obama.
Barack Obama.
He liked comics as a kid.
He did. He liked
what
Conan
if he
the
wrote
Barbarian.
A Conan comic?
That would be amazing.
That would be incredible.
All right.
I would feel bad for Brian Wood because he just got that gig.
No.
And now Barack Obama's going to swoop in.
Yeah.
Maybe after he's not president anymore.
4 years from now.
Well, or.
I'm just saying. 4 years from now.
When Newt Gingrich has put him in prison.
Oh, Jesus.
For war crimes.
For war crimes.
Conan
he's like,
Barbarian.
You killed Osama bin Laden. Yeah, you're going to prison.
Speaking of Osama bin Laden, we didn't talk about Savage Dragon.
We should mention that. Yeah, yes. Yeah. So basically, there was an issue with Savage Dragon that came out this week. We can't do a short podcast to save our lives.
All right, here's what happens in the comic. Let me sum it up really quickly.
Go for
are
it.
You ruin
Osama, I was excited. I was going to
Osama bin Laden's body is thrown into the ocean.
You know,
gets irradiated. He comes back as Godzilla to destroy New York, and Savage Dragon fights him.
And then Savage Dragon's sidekick says, He's come to finish what he started. It's so funny. Yeah. It's a lot of it's like whatever's going on in Savage Dragon right now, but you can just skip right past
it's
that
ludicrous.
Stuff and read
so
the
if
Osama
you
want to
see
stuff.
A giant green Osama bin Laden in a turban and a loincloth knocking over buildings in New York City.
I feel like we should get more copies
punched
of
in
this.
The face.
We should get some more copies of it. It's
let me correct. Having superheroes throw each other to hit him in the face.
I actually want like 3 copies of this for myself to give to people.
Yeah, it was. It's kind of what comics should be in a lot of ways.
It was written by Barack Obama.
Oh, that's true.
The former president of the United States. He got fired right after this came out.
Yeah.
No, but yeah, that was a thing that happened this week.
It was.
All right, so moving on to a question that I think is going to be hard to answer. But this is from Peebo.
All right.
Peebo Bryson, who, if you guys know him, he, on the album version of the Aladdin soundtrack, he sang all the songs. Anyway,
let me do a shout out. He is also the founder of hometownsounds.com, which is a free...
Peebo Bryson.
Yes.
This is Paul Vodra, who we call Peebo because he's a friend of ours. But yeah,
DJ
Jared
name.
Can give him his shout out.
Yeah, so he started hometownsounds.com, which is a free online radio that only plays music from the DC and DC suburbs.
It's very cool. He worked very hard to get it going, and it's very
every
awesome.
Genre. So if you are a band from local, get on there. Otherwise, you want to hear some local guys, there you go.
My band's going to be on there.
There you go.
Yeah.
I'm
in a band with Peebo. He plays drums.
That helps.
We're called Gladiator Cop. GladiatorCop.bandcamp.com.
This is all plugs.
My Twitter is at Kevin Panetta. And you should check out my webpage, magnabeam.com. And I'm doing a 2-page spread in the middle of Magic Bullet number 4.
Yo, I'm gonna make some shirts, some candles. If you guys want to buy them, I'm gonna put them on my website.
Candles.com. I haven't checked to see if it's available yet, but I'm sure it will be.
I'm going to buy it right now.
No. GreekCandles.com. Nobody got that.
Candles.XXX. I heard that's available.
That's taken.
I heard that's available.
That was taken, though.
So Peebo says, do you think the original Chris Claremont run on Uncanny X-Men is worth a reread?
Or, hell no.
Or a read? If not the whole run, then how much of it? Thanks, nerds.
Well, now I don't want to answer.
Because he called us nerds?
Yeah.
Well, he's a nerd, too.
No, because he thanked us, and we just do this job for our own edification.
So
no,
when he says the original Chris Claremont run, I mean, that's like 17 years.
Yeah,
I'm pretty sure is the amount.
Was it that long before he stopped?
Yeah, because he was writing it through the Jim Lee stuff
for a while.
Yeah,
but I mean, with no break, there wasn't like
no, there weren't other writers.
Wow,
that's he was crazy. Doing all that stuff.
I would definitely not read the Jim Lee.
No, the first couple Jim Lee issues are okay.
Oh, yeah.
The ones he writes aren't so good, but the first few issues, they're all right.
Yeah, they're all right, whatever.
But
just read the Phoenix.
So for me, I'm kind of a neophyte when it comes to the X-Men. I've read certain things. Yeah.
That's surprising.
Recently, I've read a lot of things, but there are big chunks of X-Men that I don't know. So for me, even when he was asking me like about this, like reading the original run of Chris Claremont stuff, for me, I always think of that as just like basically up through when John Byrne stopped drawing.
Yeah.
That's a good point.
And for me, that's kind of where I say maybe take a break. But then there's a lot of stuff after that, like the Alan Davies stuff and like a bunch of other stuff. So I don't know if I'm really the best guy to say. But for me, my kind of cutoff was Days of Future Past. And then there's like one issue after that that's really good, too. But
he wrote God Loves, Man Kills, right?
Yeah. Right. I think that actually came out before Days of Future Past. Yeah. That was like a Marvel original graphic novel. Yeah. But I know there's a lot of good stuff in the middle, so I don't want to just say don't read that stuff.
Well, Dark Phoenix saga.
In this chunk I'm talking about. That's like up through issue 144, I think, or 145 is when Days of Future Past ends.
Definitely
read all that stuff because it's great.
Definitely stop way before Extreme X-Men.
Yes. And that was written by Claremont.
But that's when he came back.
What was the one? X-Men Forever.
Don't call it a comeback.
Yep.
So, I mean, Jared, you're kind of an X-Men guy, right?
Not really. Like, the same thing. Like,
I'm an X-Men.
Are you?
Yeah.
So what would you say? The stuff after Days of Future Past? I mean, is there a big chunk of stuff after that that's still really good?
Yeah, it's mostly okay, but...
Because they've got a lot of good artists. There's, like, Alan Davis. There's, like, Paul Smith.
I don't think I've read all of that, but, like, I've definitely read the big stuff. That's the thing. Like, it's just okay after that. I don't know. It's whatever.
Some of that stuff suffers, especially the early stuff, like the stuff that's by John Byrne and Dave Cockrum.
Yeah.
Is that it was increasing in popularity so much as it was coming out. It's like Marvel was getting really big again. Like Daredevil by Frank Miller was coming out and a bunch of other stuff. So they were doing like huge recaps in every issue.
Yeah.
So I think a lot of us now are used to reading comics in big chunks.
Yeah.
And at the time, it wasn't the case. So you'd get your X-Men comic every month, and maybe it was recapping a lot of stuff that happened, but it wasn't such a big deal.
Yeah.
But you go back and read it now, and it's like there's so much of just...
Oh, like where there's like the caption and people thinking themselves. Yeah. It's like, I can't believe Wolverine just killed that guy. And you're like, I read it 3 pages ago. I know.
Right. So it does suffer a little bit from that. But overall, I think that initial run is really good. Yeah. And
I read them all. Like when they put out the Essentials, the black and white reprints of like 500 pages each. I read like the first 5 or 6 of them just straight in a row. And I hadn't read a lot of the earlier issues in sequence like that. I really enjoyed it up to the point when the Brood started showing up, which are a bunch of space aliens, which kind of
the Brood stuff's awesome. That stuff's great.
All right. Don't listen to Nick. Don't listen to me.
The Brood are like aliens that like impregnate the X-Men and make aliens come out of their brains.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
But anyway, so
you're saying that.
So obviously we're not the most educated on this. No. I know we have a few customers that are very big into X-Men, particularly Mike, who sends us questions quite a bit. He was showing me some stuff today.
The Brood are iconic, yo.
I didn't say they weren't.
So if anybody wants to send in some really great X-Men stories from sort of that pre-Jim Lee, but post...
Claremont.
Post John Byrne.
Yeah.
We'll read them and review them.
Yeah, we'll read them and review them. So go ahead and send in some suggestions. I'm looking at you, Mr. Cogill. Yeah. So,
you're looking at me.
I am looking at Nick and pointing at him and pretending that he's Mike.
He's playing the role of Mike in this.
But, or anybody else, because I know a lot of people have a lot of love for that stuff. So send in some suggestions and we will read some of that stuff. All right. So we just have one final question.
It's going to be good.
This is from Eden, who you guys may remember from our podcast. Her Twitter handle is @comicsgirl. My Twitter is @KevinPanetta.
This is all plugs tonight.
I'm also in a band. We're at gladiator.com/bandcamp.com. Anyway, so Eden says, besides Big Planet Comics, what other comic book stores anywhere in the country or world for that matter, which is good because I have one from England, have you enjoyed going to? What stores do you think get it right? And what are the things you think a lot of comic stores could be doing better? Nick, we're going to start with you because I'm going to imagine you don't really have much to say about
He's
this.
He's got some
Here's
Greeks.
The thing. Here's what not to do.
All right, hit me.
Well, here's what you should do. Clean your store. Don't make it all dirty and gross.
God, yes.
You know, like old statues everywhere. Make sure you change your posters every once in a while. I've been to a store recently that had a bunch of posters for Onslaught. I was like, really?
Wait, the original Onslaught?
Yeah, yeah.
Posters for like the Aspen swimsuit issues.
Yeah. Like, I just
don't scare girls away.
Just make your store more modern. I mean, just, I don't know. Don't play like Redskins games in the background. Like, well, I guess I do that, but just like,
but you turn them off when people come in.
Yeah. Play some music.
Unless they're like people that want to listen.
Yeah.
To
it. But no, I mean, just be nice to your customers. God, that's the main problem.
Yeah.
A lot of these people, like, you just walk in and
it's
like
a privilege to be in my store.
Yeah. They're like, what are you doing here? And just,
that's true.
I don't know. Like, and they don't want to talk.
I'm only like that with certain people.
Yeah. Me.
Just try to talk to your customers. That's true. Make sure you're honest with your customer. Tell them if something sucks, like even if it's something that they're probably going to buy.
That's true. That's a big thing that we kind of support is like, it's like if you're just honest with people, it's like, okay, maybe we ordered too many copies of this comic and it stinks. Yep. But that doesn't mean we're going to tell people it's good because if it's not good, you don't want to tell somebody that and then they never trust you ever again, you know?
Yeah.
It's like set up that trust with people.
That's, I think, the biggest, coolest thing about comic book stores that you get in almost no other place is it's such a community-based thing of personal relationships.
Yeah,
like you come in, you know the people working there, and they know you.
Yeah.
And you can't get that almost anywhere
else. To answer the part about the best comic store I ever went to, I don't really have one. I've been to some cool I've been to some cool ones. Big Planet, Bethesda.
Which Big Planet comics?
Vienna. Anyway, but one.
Of course.
Like the best experience I had going to a comic book store was when I went to Greece this summer. I went to this comic book store. God, I can't remember what it's called now. That sucks. I really wanted to say what it was. But anyway, I went to this comic store in Greece. I did some research and found like a comic store in Greece, which is very rare. And I went there and I talked to the guy and he spoke English and he spoke English like fluently. Like, I guess he lived here for a while. But
to him in Greek and he spoke to you in English?
No, he spoke English. And I spoke English.
Don't make Nick's story longer, Jared.
Yeah, don't make it longer, please. It's already long-winded. But anyway, I went in there and he was like talking about comics and he explained to me the entire comic scene in Greece and how it works. And
that's
how
cool, though.
It's hard for like Greeks to get their comics out there. And there's some people in Greece that actually make comics, but you know, like it's impossible to get distributed. And Greece is a small country, so it's not like, you know, they'll get a wide distribution. There's a few Greek people that have made some breakthrough.
Vasilis Lolos.
Yeah, and there's a guy who did Old City Blues.
I can't remember his name right now, but Old City Blues is fantastic.
We'll talk about that
more in our Best of the Year talk in a couple weeks.
It was a cool experience, and like I felt really, it was cool. Like he gave me some free like Greek comics. He's like, here, take this. There's a Greek samurai comic, Greek superhero comic, and I gave him like, I was like, here, I brought a bunch of copies of Fear Itself.
Because
I knew he was like, I ran out of these. And I was like, here, I brought you like a bunch of them. And he's like, wow, that's great.
That's awesome.
And, you know, we had a little exchange. It was neat. I don't know. It was neat to see the comic industry, how it works in other countries.
Yeah.
You know, like it's funny because like most of the big things are all the same things that are kind of big there. Like,
interesting.
Like all the superhero stuff is huge and like the other stuff. They actually had a lot of stuff. It was like going to like Midtown Comics, but like a slightly smaller version in Greece.
Cool. Wow. That's awesome. Yeah.
What about you, Jared? What are some of your, I'm sure you've been to Lambiac, haven't you?
Oh, yes, I have. That'll be one. Bergen Street, new store started up 2 years ago, 3 years ago, up in.
Right after, where? Or before Rocket Ship closed.
Yeah, up in Brooklyn. Is astounding. I finally went there for the first time this year, just a few months ago. They do the style of comic book store where they're trying to treat it like a very classy English bookstore. So it's all, you know, like nicely painted walls and dark wood bookcases and copper countertops. And, you know, it's very classy.
And they have a very curated selection of comics, right?
Just like, you know, most stores, you can't carry everything, but they, you know, they carry the good stuff, but they definitely tilt towards this is the best stuff and we're going to promote it. So they really push a lot of small independent publishers. And like Tucker, the manager there, was like, here's my shelf of mini comics that I've been promoting. He's like, 50% of these are by women. It's not that hard to do. You just need to find the talented people and put them up here. I guess everyone could do
it. It's weird how many more women work in indie comics than in like mainstream comics.
Well, you just go to SPX. I mean, I think that's the only comic show I've ever been to where the women actually outnumber the men at the show.
Yeah, it was amazing. So that was great. The one Kevin just mentioned was Lambiek, which is in Amsterdam and is the oldest comic book store in the world. That one wins in most categories.
I thought that was Big Planet Bethesda.
Second.
Oh, no, that's just that Joel is the oldest man in the world. We love you, Joel.
Yeah. Yeah, Joel, send us in a complaint email.
I'm sure he's listening.
That's my joke. They win because, you know, like all Dutch, they speak, you know, English and German and French and, you know, Dutch and
Communists.
Whatever. So basically, they can get comics from anywhere in Europe and most people there can read them. So they will have, like, this is the first time I saw a creator section. So it was like, you know, the comics by Bilal and they're in like five languages. So it's like, oh, wow, you can't find this in English. Here it is in French and German. And here's a Dutch translation. But they were really cool because they had an art section where the back, it's a very small store. Back on the right side, there's a little platform, and up there they have original art by people, which is something that Bergen Street also does. And then above the store, they have an apartment where like cartoonists who come to do signings at their store will stay.
Nice.
So it'll be like, oh yeah, Robert Crumb's staying up at the apartment.
We should put a cot in our back room so people can do something similar.
Well, you got the floor. Well, Robert Crumb, you're welcome to sleep on the floor of Big Planet Comics anytime.
Our bathroom glows in the dark.
It does.
So I've had a couple of weird comic stores that I've really liked. I used to live down in Alabama, and I actually worked at a comic store there for a while called Optic Nerve that was run by this guy, Marcus Lusk, who did a comic called Tales from the Bog, which was pretty popular for a little while. It had a preview in the back of Bone, was kind of the height of his popularity. But we were all independent comics.
Really?
And we were also a cult video store.
Nice.
I was like, how do you say? Okay.
Yeah. So and the entire video collection was my stuff. Wow. And then we got robbed and it all got stolen.
Ooh.
What?
And the guy Marcus that runs it, he's a good guy. But he was like, I'm so sorry, man. Here's what I'm going to do. You can have free video rentals for life. I was like, all the videos are mine. Nice. But it was a cool store, and we kind of survived as long as we could, you know, kind of doing the indie stuff. It was definitely a cool store. And there was another store in Atlanta called Criminal Records, which I always loved. They were kind of a punk rock kind of indie music store, and then they just had like a huge comic section, and they would have signings there all the time, and they kind of dealt more in like indie comics as well, stuff like James Kolchaka, and like that's where I would go get all my milk and cheese comics and stuff. And that place was great, and they're still around.
That's
which
cool.
is amazing because comics are a dying industry and CDs are a dying industry.
Wave of the future.
But probably one of the best stores I've been to. When I was in London, I went to Forbidden Planet, which is great.
Yep.
But I went to a store there called Gosh.
Ah, yes.
And have you been to Gosh?
I know of it.
Jew is.
And
I actually went there once.
Gosh is a very small store, but it's very curated, and they have they kind of deal in like higher end books. They also carry all the American like superhero stuff, and that's I think it's a big part of their business. But they had like a great like art book section where they had a lot of stuff I had never seen. They had a lot of books about animation, which I think is cool,
that's cool.
Because that's a thing you don't see in a lot of bookstores. Right. But I feel like it's very much married to the comics industry in a lot of ways, and like storyboard books and things like that that are basically comics. And just all the guys there are very knowledgeable and very nice, and they have like a lot of cool. They like carry toys and stuff like that, but they're like cool toys, like they have like movement toys and things like that. You know, just kind of, I don't know. It's just a cool store.
Yeah,
they just have lots of cool stuff.
And but anyway, the best is still Big Planet.
Best is Big Planet Comics, Vienna. The V is for victory.
It's true
because we reign victorious over all the other Big Planet Comics stores because we're number one because we're the ones on the podcast and
that
we get to say
is
that.
The key.
Yeah. So speaking of the podcast,
that's it. Right?
That's it.
All right.
If you guys have questions, send them to podcast@bigplanetcomics.com. If you guys have comments, send them to podcast@bigplanetcomics.com. And if you guys have X-Men books that you want us to read, send them to Big Comics, Big Planet Comics. Oh, geez, I lost it there. podcast@bigplanetcomics.com. And if you guys are on Twitter, my Twitter handle is @KevinBanana. Anyway.
If you want to buy my new cologne, it's called Nick Spot.
It's called
Hot.
What is it called?
Nick Spot.
Nick Spot by Dennis Feinstein. So we're going to take next week off. We're going to take a little holiday break. And then we're going to be back. We're going to do like a super show. We're going to talk about all the best comics that came out during the year.
El super especial.
It's going to be amazing. Johnny
Only
Blue Jeans.
Spanish.
It's going to be completely in English.
Oh.
Just so people aren't confused.
But British English.
British English. Yeah. So, So we'll see you guys in a couple weeks. Everybody have a nice holiday.
Happy end of the year and
happy,
all.
Happy end of the year.
Happy Kwanzaa. Happy, what else?
Christmaka. Festivus.
Whatever you
winter think. Solstices.
Yeah, whatever.
What's a Wiccan holiday?
Either way. We'll see you guys next year. See you later.